Greetings in Jesus' name this morning. It's good to be in the house of God, to worship Him. I feel like we've already been blessed with the devotional choices. Choices, our life is full of choices. Every day we make choices. We start out the day with choices. Very important to make the right choices and to keep it in the will of God, the choices that we make, which makes me think of our Sunday school lesson, love God. Do we really love God? He is coming again, as it said, I think in our lesson, that He says, I am with you, but I am leaving, and then I will come again. Are we looking for Him? Do we love Him enough that we are longing to see Him come? My dad has, over the years, he has mentioned different times about looking so much for the Lord that every time he steps out of the house to look up and see if the Lord is coming. Are we expecting it that much? He is coming again. The question is, are we ready? Do we have our, as they say, our bags packed? Today I would like to, the message is, I entitled it, The Faithful Leader. And that sort of comes about because of a possible ordination in the future. And I'd like to use Numbers chapter 13 and 14 is what I'll be reading out of and speaking some out of. But talking about the faithful leader and how we need to be leaders of faith. We need to have faith before we actually have a position of leadership, because you don't necessarily receive faith afterwards as such. If you're not prepared for it beforehand, it's going to be a lot more difficult afterwards. So let's prepare ourselves for whatever leadership, not necessarily just as a minister or a deacon or whatever, but as leaders in life. All of us, we look at the men as the leaders, and rightfully so. But the women are also leaders to a certain extent. So we're all leaders in one place or another. And let's be prepared for that. There's a story told of a mother who decided to give her little boy a leadership opportunity. The family had invited friends over for Sunday lunch. And so she said, Johnny, why don't you lead us in prayer before we eat? Giving him the opportunity to step forth. But Johnny decided at that time to put on a bashful face, and so he declined. He said, I don't know how. But his mother said, oh yes, you do. Why don't you just say what you've heard me say? So Johnny said, oh God, why did we have to invite these people over on a day like today? You might be a leader without even realizing it. But the moral of this story is, if you're new to leading, be careful. I don't think he was quite prepared for that position of leadership at that point in time. So be prepared. Gear your life. All of us are growing and maturing. We're getting older, and we should be conditioning our life for some position of leadership, whatever it is. For the young girls growing up, maybe someday God will call you to be a mother in a home. For the brethren, men, leaders in the home, all of us, let's condition our lives for some position of leadership. Doesn't mean that God doesn't call everyone to be in the ministry, but there's many other places of leadership that God calls us to. So there's about 4 points I think I'd like to talk about. And number one, a place of leadership is a place of honor. It is an honor for God to call someone to a position of leadership. But a little more on that later. Numbers chapter 13, we'll read verses 1 through 16, or most of it. Number 1, verse 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, send thou men, that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto you, the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them. And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent forth from the wilderness of Paran, all those men were heads of the children of Israel. And these were their names. And I will just do the names. Shemua, Shaphat, Igal, Oshia, Palti, Gadiel, Gadai, Amiel, Sethor, Nabai, and Guel. And then verse 16, these are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Oshia, the son of Jeshua, Jeshua. And then he called him by name. And I'm not sure how he did that, if he had all the people gathered together or what. I'm not sure exactly how he did that, but that's the ones that he called. These 12 men chosen as leaders for God's people were honored for a lifetime of work, a leadership, a lifetime of integrity, and a lifetime of courage. This was based, they were chosen because they were leaders in their tribes. That's why they were chosen. They had proven themselves that they could handle leadership. And so that's why God chose them, or Moses chose them. And we already know the story of how the 10 of the 12 failed miserably in their leadership role. Only Caleb and Joshua would lead with courage, and God-led conviction. When Paul briefed Timothy about the qualifications of deacons, he said in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 13, for they that have used the office of a deacon well purchase to themselves a good degree and great boldness in the faith which is in Christ Jesus. Doing something well, there is rewards, there is blessings that come along with doing something well. But being prepared to handle that kind of leadership is very important. If a man serves well as a deacon, he earns an excellent standing. And the leader who would be a deacon or a pastor in a church is not exalted over the Christians that he serves. There is honor there, but he's not exalted over. Instead, he's simply pulled out of the group like these 12 leaders were there in the wilderness and sort of placed in the spotlight, really. There is great honor in being selected as a leader for God's people, but the danger arrives when the leader wants all of the honor, when he pulls the honor to himself, because the honor belongs to God. And that's where the preparation comes in preparing ourselves for a position of leadership so that we can have our priorities right and know that God is the one that chooses. And then he will give us what we need to go through. It's not that we promote ourselves that we would be a fit for that particular leadership. That's not, I don't think that's how we need to operate. So if you are chosen for some position of leadership, give God the honor and the glory. And number two, the place of leadership is a place of great responsibility. And this could be maybe the cost of leadership, if you will call it that. And then we'll go down to in chapter 13 here to verse 25 and read to 33. And they returned from searching the land after 40 days, and they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran unto Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came into the land whither thou sendest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great, and moreover we saw the children of Anak there. And the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it were men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so were we in their sight. For a generation, for the generation of God's people on the edge of the promised land, there was never a bigger crisis of leadership than when these 12 were given the responsibility of spying out the land. They were to seek out the land and come back with the reports, and then issue a challenge of faith to all of the people. Two would go with the challenge. Two of them were up to the challenge, and 10 would sort of wilt under the heavy load of responsibility. But let's take note, all 12 of these leaders were courageous. All 12 took a courageous action at the beginning. They slipped into the land of the enemy and lived there for some time. I think it was 40 days. Lived there in probably you would call it a dangerous place because they were spying. And they stole some of the prime produce from the landowners who probably were guarding their produce, I would assume. If you had such big produce, I imagine we'd probably have some guards around it or something. All 12 came home safely. They all completed that first portion of the task that they were given. They had been good spies, and they had brought back a full report of what they had seen. However, the responsibility of the group was not simply to spy out the land. They were not chosen as geologists or real estate agents or agricultural surveyors. They were chosen to be leaders of God's people, charged with giving God's people God's message. Whenever godly leaders are charged to do whatever they're charged to do, their responsibility is to be faith-driven leaders. And that's where this group failed, I believe. Instead of reporting faith, 10 would eventually report of the fear that they felt. They were not willing to step out in faith. Only two gave the challenge of moving forward in faith. And then the people sided with the fear instead of the faith. Their opportunity to live inside of the promised land was vanishing. They had this promise of living in this land, and they heard how good the land was, but they're giants in there. There's no way. There's just no way. We can't do it. The place of leadership is a place of tremendous responsibility, for the leader's faith is on public display. The responsibility of a leader to live in that faith is a great weight. So pray for those in leadership. They need prayers. And number three, an effective leader does not let problems stop the promise. If we go into chapter 14, there in verse 1, and all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. They were so overcome with the fear and the what they thought was a loss of this promise of going into this land. They were still out wandering around in the wilderness. I'm not sure exactly how long it was up to this point, but they were still looking forward to moving on into this promised land. And then it sounded like everything was just gonna go down because we just can't inhabit this land. Verse 2, and all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in this wilderness? And wherefore hath the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, let us make a captain and let us return to Egypt. They had already forgotten the slavery that they were under. They would rather go back to live in slavery than to continue on. Verse 5, then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel, and Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel ye not against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. Faith. They knew that God would be able to just give them the land. It says, he will bring us into the land and give it us. They were not going in there on their own strength. They were going in with the Lord. Verse 10, but all the congregation of the people, or all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long will this people provoke me? How long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I have showed among them? I will smite them with pestilence and disinherit them, and will make of thee a greater nation and mightier than they. The people were influenced by these 10 frightful spies who made a case of fear instead of the two leaders calling them toward faith. God wanted to destroy them all. He says there, how long will this people provoke me, and how long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I have showed among them? They had already experienced miracles even on their journey, and just being released out of or being able to come out of Egypt in itself was a mighty, mighty sign. But they were already forgetting all of that. Had God destroyed them, the entire exodus from Egypt would have been wasted. The promise of the promised land would be delayed by centuries if God would have wiped out all these people. And the nation of God's people would be destroyed, and God's reputation thereof would be greatly damaged. So this really was not a small problem. But Moses made his best case before God, desperately trying to ward off an evil and righteous anger, because God was very angry with these people. The question is, how angry does God get with us? I have showed you, I have told you, I have done many things, I have blessed you, and you still are going your own way. You're doing your own thing. Verse 13, and Moses said unto the Lord, then the Egypt shall hear it, for thou broughtest up this people in thy might from among them, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that thou, Lord, art among this people, that thou, Lord, art seen face to face, and that thy cloud standeth over them, and that thou goest before them by daytime in a pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire by night. Now, if thou shalt kill all this people as one man, then the nations which have heard the fame of thee and will speak, saying, because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he sware unto them, therefore he has slain them in the wilderness. And now I beseech thee, let the power of my Lord be great, according unto thou hast spoken, saying, the Lord is longsuffering and of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, and by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. Pardon, I beseech thee, the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of thy mercy, as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt until now. What a plead for the leader. Moses just stepped out, and he knew this was a big problem, but he also saw that if God wiped these people out, even God's reputation would be tarnished. And verse 20, and the Lord said, I have pardoned according to thy word. He pardoned the people. But there is conditions also. As truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, because all those men which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, they have tempted me now these 10 times and have not hearkened to my voice. Surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it. There is consequences. It's amazingly, but God relented, and instead of destroying the nation, God only destroyed a generation. Reading on, verse 26, and the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel which they murmured against me. Say unto them, as truly as I live, saith the Lord, as ye have spoken in my ears, so will I do to you. Your carcasses will fall in this wilderness, and all that are numbered of you, according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me. Doubtless ye shall not come into the land concerning which I swear to make you dwell therein, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. But your little ones, which ye say shall be a prey, Them will I bring in, and they shall know the land which ye have despised. But as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in the wilderness. There is consequences for following wrong leaders. And I don't know what the consequences, well, obviously the consequences of these 10 were also that they died in the wilderness. They did not see the promised land because they doubted God. They didn't walk ahead in faith. It is very important to lead by faith, to walk in faith. And that is part of the Christian life, is to have faith at all times. Strengthen our faith. 40 years later, Joshua and Caleb would lead the children and the grandchildren of this experience into the promised land. They would do so only because Moses did his best not to let a problem stop the promise. Moses intervened and asked God to not destroy this people. I think if I'm correct, there's another place where Moses again stepped in and said, hey, you might as well destroy me. If you're going to destroy them, you need to take me out too. Moses was a leader of faith. If you're going to lead, you'd better comprehend the truth. There will always be problems along the way. All leaders face some kind of problems. The problems come and problems go. In fact, Moses might have even said it this way: today they complain about manna. Tomorrow they'll complain about quail. And one day it's a problem of thirst. And another day it's idolatry. Leaders learn that problems look very large in the present, but small from a distance. Effective leaders simply refuse to let something that looks large block out the big picture. If Moses had forgotten the priceless value of God's promise, his people would have died in the wilderness. So an effective leader cannot let a temporary problem, no matter how large, block the promise of the goal. Keep our eyes on the goal. And that's not always easy. I can speak from experience on that. But that's where faith comes in, and trusting God and knowing that you are where God wants you to be and God will work things out. But it takes faith. Colonel George Washington Gothels, the man responsible for the completion of the Panama Canal, had stifling problems with the climate, the geography of Central America, driving rains, incredible heat, and disease, deadly disease. It seems like those problems just never left. They were just always there. But his biggest challenge was a growing criticism from those back home, back in the States. Those who predicted that he would never finish the project. The criticism of how things were going and what all. The voice of the critics appeared to be the biggest problem of all. Finally, a colleague asked him, "Aren't you going to answer these critics?" He said, "In time." His partner asked, "When?" He said, "When the canal is finished. Then he'll tackle those problems, those critics. In fact, there won't be anything to tackle then. The problem was the critics were empty. They wouldn't have had anything anymore." Stay focused to the goal. Don't be distracted by problems. And number four, the most important quality a leader must have is faith. We must have faith. Moses was humble. He was compassionate. He was also very consistent. But most of all, he was a man of great faith. And if we turn to Hebrews chapter 11, verses 23 and 20 through 29, I believe we see there that he believed God and that he led God's people by faith. And verse 23 there in Hebrews chapter 11. By faith, Moses, when he was born and was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child, they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. And by faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians assaying to do were drowned. Faith, leading with faith. History's summary of Moses' life was that he was a man of faith. Moses had been a consistent man of faith among the people who were consistently faithless. That had to be very difficult. When God listed his complaints about the people, he said that they had tested him 10 times, which we read in verse 22 there in chapter 14. So how could the people who escaped Egypt walk safely across the dry floor of the Red Sea and eaten miraculous food doubt that God was with them? Had they not seen the tabernacle and the fire that glowed over it at night? Could they not remember the plagues that had struck Egypt at Moses' command? Had he already forgotten all of that? But let's not get too hard on those people. We would probably have responded the same way. Because even now, when things go wrong, when things don't work out, what is our response? Do we move ahead in faith, or do we feel defeated? Even Jesus' disciples had trouble walking on that bridge of faith, even after the resurrection. The disciples who were about to see Jesus ascend into heaven had seen the healing of countless sick people, the restoring of sight to the blind, and the raising of the dead. They had seen the crucifixion, the resurrection. They had been with Jesus multiple times after the resurrection. And they could see him at that very moment. But just before Jesus gave his last instructions, we read there in Matthew chapter 28, verses 16 and 17. He says, "Then the 11 disciples went away into Galilee, into the mountain where Jesus had appointed them. And when they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted." Even then, there were still some doubts amongst the disciples. We even read that the things that Jesus did, that the writer supposed that the world couldn't even contain all of the books if they were written about the things that Jesus did. And they still doubted. Would we? How firm is our faith? It's a challenge. How firm is our faith? It seems unbelievable. How could they see all that they had seen and still doubt the power of God? Now, we didn't see all that, but we have it all written. We can read. We know. We believe the Bible. It happened. We've got all the miracles that happened back into Egypt with the children of Israel. We've got Jesus' miracles that he did. Do we still doubt? Is there some doubt in our minds? Do we love God? In our Sunday school lesson, we had about if we love God, we will keep his commandments. And also, if we don't love God, then we won't keep his sayings. So I guess that's a test for us. How obedient are we? If we are obedient to God and his word, then that can prove to us that we love him. If we have problems being a Christian like God wants us to be, then we don't love God like we should. The end of truth is that faith is a tough quality to have, and that if a person is going to lead God's people, he simply cannot lead without faith. We must believe without doubting. We must be able to believe and then act confidently upon those beliefs. Perhaps that's why Jesus looked at those struggling, doubting disciples and then simply said, "Now go into the world. Teach them." Jesus called his leaders to a faith-based action just as he does today. He still does that today. Some of us might still have some doubts, but the instructions still come loud and clear. He says, "Go. Whatever I have called you to do, do it. Just have faith." So in closing, what a gift God has given to us in the Bible. The stories that we can read and we can gain more faith. It can help build our faith. While we might be squarely in the middle of a crisis or a problem or a challenge, the record of God's people before us reminds us of a course of action that we must take, and also of the great reward for the leader who holds fast to the challenges of faith. When God issued his judgment against the people, he also issued rewards. Joshua had the privilege of leading a new generation across the Jordan River, through the crumbling walls of Jericho, and into the promised land. Caleb lived a long and vibrant life and saw the passion of his faith grow greatly rewarded. Both of the men outlived every grumbler and complainer and naysayer around them. They became the only two names, basically, I think, that most of us remember from the original 12. The other 10, we don't really remember that much. There are great blessings that come to faithful leaders who lead by faith. So now we need to ask ourselves the question, as we're coming to continuing to think about possibly having an ordination, so am I practicing and exercising my faith now so that if or when God calls me to a position of leadership, that I am prepared for whatever he calls me to do? Are we there? It doesn't mean that God is necessarily going to, he's not going to call all of us to the same position of leadership. But he will call us to some position of leadership. Whether it's continuing what we are doing now or giving us more. Let's build our faith in God so that we can continue to be at his disposal whatever he has for us. Let's kneel to pray.